Welcome to the Grand Cast, season 2, episode finale, number 12, the last one of the season. Today is Friday, 06 is June 23rd, 2017, 2 days after the solstice. Got pretty close. Close enough. The seasons end based on the solar cycle. Because why not? Or maybe there's a reason, I don't know. My guest this evening, this late afternoon, early evening, on the, I guess, tied for third longest day of the year.
Number three.
Sunlight wise. Sean fucking McGinnity.
That's the crowd, everyone. That's you at home.
I've heard Josh make that noise before. Thank you for being here today, Sean.
Thank you for having me on this season finale.
I was worried that you were going to hold out and I wouldn't be able to complete my Planned Parenthood collection.
Oh, man. No, I can't do that. I can't.
You made me sweat a little bit, though. Kept saying no.
Since this is a season finale, can we end it with a cliffhanger?
Though? Absolutely.
All right.
I'll leave that up to you. All right. So you've got some time to come up with an improvised cliffhanger. That'd be great.
Off the top of my head, though, it's just going to be the end? Question mark. That's usually a good cliffhanger.
Will there be an ellipsis after the question mark, or just or before the question mark?
I guess we could do the end .. Heller ellipsis. I started using it myself.
It's way better.
It is. It's absolutely way better.
33.3% better.
Oh yeah, repeating. That third three is repeating.
Yeah, I forgot the little remainder there, but it's very important.
I'm a big math guy, and what I mean by that is I'm not a math guy.
You don't have to be a mathematician to be precise.
True.
I'm going to start out with the mission statement for the Grand Cast, which is: the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. Do you think I should get rid of the mission statement in season 3? Like, people should know it by now. It's not really changing anymore.
Like the mission statement. I didn't want to be one of those people that like spoke over you before you said the mission statement or spoke, but I did. Oh. And I was that guy and I just kept it going. And I feel like other people have to keep it going. I can't be the last one.
Okay.
So I like the mission statement. I really do.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of times it'll be someone's first episode, even if it's number 30 or whatever. And they might not know what the show is all about. So
yeah.
Huh. All right.
I've been here since Tom Mayer. Yeah. Tom Mayer.
First episode ever released to the public.
I know Josh was first, and then, I don't know, there was that fire or whatever.
Oh, no, it's out there.
Oh, no, I didn't realize it was the same one. I thought something happened to the audio with that one. You couldn't release it, the original.
It's not up to my standards. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sounds a bit like a walkie-talkie because of the recording settings I used, but it exists and it's funny and it's on the internet if you know where to look.
Okay.
You gotta know a guy.
Is it you?
Can't comment on that. All right. The goals of the Grand Cast, still only 2. I don't think I need more than 2. I think they cover the basis I'd like covered. First one, to post 1 new episode weekly. Most of the time. It's close. And then the second goal is to make at least 1 person's day better through the creation of quality content.
Those are good goals. And honestly, you've been at it and doing really well at keeping it going. And I've had my day made better through the creation of quality content.
Oh.
Personally.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Thank you. Yeah, it's weird, like, setting a goal to do something every single week and then sticking to it. Not always good at that.
It's admirable, though. It's really cool. And I've, you know, like, I'm a little seasoned because I've listened to all of the first season and most of the second season, I'm pretty sure. I'm a little behind. But I know how this goes, and I know how... It's just, it's cool that you've been putting all this work into it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Before we get into the interview, I have a short statement to read regarding the summer solstice. The summer solstice, or estival, meaning belonging to or appearing in summer solstice, also known as midsummer, occurs when a planet's rotational axis or geographic pole on either its northern or its southern hemisphere is most inclined toward the star that it orbits. On the summer solstice, Earth's maximum axial tilt toward the sun is 23.44 degrees. Worldwide, interpretation of the event has varied among cultures, but most recognize the event in some way with holidays, festivals, and rituals around that time with themes of religion or fertility.
Ooh.
Solstice is derived from the Latin words sol, meaning sun, and sestir, meaning to stand still.
Those were some interesting facts. I didn't know that sol was going to mean sun. That's cool. I know that stam means bone because I was in a biology class and one of my classmates was just like, stam, bone. And this was like, ninth grade. Yeah.
Penis bone?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the verb to bone?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, sticking it to...
Yeah, he was like, hey... Someone, I stammed your mom, and everyone, much to everyone's delight. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's clever. How do you spell that?
I think it was STOM, not STHOM.
Inside joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Stom.
What if I'm wrong? What if I like remembered it completely wrong, and it's actually like. Some other word.
Oh, that's fine. Like half the stuff that gets said in this podcast is inaccurate
and the other inappropriate. Half is,
yeah.
Too many inside jokes. Sorry.
It's like an onion. I don't know. I've grown less fond of onions as of late.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't eat them for like a month. And then when I went back, I think I might've had like a bad onion and it just didn't. Like it was overly ripe and it tasted kind of like burnt, I guess. I don't know. And I've been eating less onions now.
Huh.
Because I guess if you eat something frequently, you just become kind of accustomed to it.
Yeah.
Like if you eat very salty food all the time, it tastes normal. But then if you don't eat salty food for a while and you go back and try like a McDonald's burger, it tastes disgusting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've heard similar things because like... Well, I mean, first of all, I want to say, like, onion has just been a staple in my life anyway. Yeah. So, like, almost every time I start making anything, it's with an onion. I've heard that that's, like, French style. You just get, like, some oil, like, some olive oil, some onion, and some garlic.
Delicious. Going.
Delicious. But, like, to be away from it for a while and then to, like, come back and think it's weird, it's interesting. And then I've heard that people that eat, like, a lot more processed food are used to having more salt. And, like, I definitely grew up on a lot of processed food. I grew up on, like, beefaroni. And so it's... I have, you know, like started making more food for myself, but I feel like it's good, but it definitely was an adjustment because for the longest time I would go and have something that someone made that was just like, hey, I just made this all myself, homemade. And I would, you know, kind of think it was gross and then go like eat fries later. But things have changed now. I've grown up a little bit. My palate has matured. I eat, I'm back to, you know, nacho cheese Doritos, not just Cool Ranch. I've grown up. So,
yeah, I think a lot of people do that with sugar too. Like they get so used to drinking soda or eating candy that they don't even like notice or realize like how much sugar is in processed foods or in soda. Like one can of pop is like 150% of your daily recommended refined sugars.
That is
as nuts. An adult, and people give their kids like a whole can of pop. It's like, oh. Or you buy like a liter of soda at 7-Eleven or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I'm raising my hand right now because I am one of those people that grew up drinking soda instead of water. Like, yeah, soda was too. My water. It was weird. It was weird. I've got the teeth to prove it, unfortunately. It's weird. Yeah. For those who don't know me or have never seen me, there are no teeth in my mouth. I just had to make just that gums. Clear. Just gums.
It's very inviting.
For more processed food.
Sure. Let's get into the interview here. First question. Do you know what it is?
My favorite color?
It is!
Yes. And I would like to tell you that my favorite color is... Crap, I thought I practiced this. I practiced this.
Don't choke.
Oh my gosh. All right.
Deep breaths.
So... It's gray, but it used to be green. I used to really like just straight up Kelly green, but now it's just kind of more gray, and it's kind of gone back and forth my whole life. But
like darker light gray. Is there a specific shade?
Oh,
one of the 50.
One of the 50. Yeah, definitely on the about 50 shades darker than normal. I kind of like the charcoaly.
Charcoal.
Yeah,
That's nice.
Yeah.
Never before asked question here.
Mm-hmm.
What is your least favorite color?
Ooh, if I had to have a least favorite, it would probably be... that is a toughie because I do like a lot of colors. Sometimes there's obnoxious ones and I get really tired of certain shades of orange. Like sometimes I used to really like a melon-like orange, and then I kind of got tired of it. There was like this whole movement in this with like these mints and pastel melon colors that were going on for a while, and I kind of got tired of them.
Some melon orange.
I can get deep into this if you'd like.
It's up to you.
All right.
I'd like to expound on your color preferences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I used to sell things that had, I used to sell this product that was like had air plants in it. And I used to sell mint ones and melon colored ones. And those were my most popular sellers. And I'm just tired of both of them. I've seen too much mint and too much melon in my life.
Combined in the same arrangement?
Oh, just like, yeah, there'd be like two little vase things that are those colors and they would have plants in them. And yeah. Check.
If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
Oh, man. There's that meme going around on the internet where people say, like, why can't I be a dog during the week and a human on the weekends? And I've kind of started to adopt that. Like, it'd be cool. I mean, other than that, like, it'd be really cool to be a bird just because you can, you know, go up and down and stuff like that, and or maybe like some sort of amphibian, because I've never been a swimmer, I've never been a strong swimmer, and like a fish can survive underwater. I mean, the only other like human person that I know that can survive underwater is just like
that's Blade?
Yeah, it just oh, yeah. human. I'm going to go back. I didn't understand what you said, and I thought it sounded funny. What did you say, David Blaine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you actually did. All right. He can survive underwater. He's probably got some sort of David Blaine gill. Or the Highlander. Yeah. First
unkillable.
One. Yeah, totally unkillable unless you...
Yeah. Kevin Costner from Waterworld.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, so in fifth grade, I tried to convince... this girl in my class that I wrote Waterworld the movie.
Oh.
That year. That was my goal. And she didn't buy it. I don't think anyone else bought it. I tried to show her my scripts that I wrote on a piece of paper. She wasn't buying it, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was a good effort.
Yeah, thank you. Thought I could fit Waterworld into one page, but like the bungee jump thing alone would be like, I don't know, a novel's worth of amazingness.
What other humans have lived underwater? The mermaid from Splash? Does that count?
Yeah, was that Kim Basinger?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I haven't seen it in so long.
Tom Hanks.
I'm sure there's some other like Disney variant on that movie that came out. That's probably like Mermaid Time, something like that.
Ariel.
Yeah.
Henry Limpet.
I'm not familiar.
What's the name of that movie? I have to look it up.
Henry Rollins.
No, it's an old movie that's like half IRL, half animated, with Henry Limpet. The Don Knotts, I think.
Oh, I'm so out of the loop with this. I don't know.
The Incredible Mr. Limpet. 1964.
These are all new words to me. I mean, not The Incredible Mr., but like Limpet's a new word. I'm not familiar with that one. So, yeah, I'd never heard.
I think it means stiff. In Estonian. Moving on from the underwater humans, what is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Oh, man. Okay. So, I mean, I could always say my parents. My mom was really witty. She still is. And she's always kind of had that, like, I don't know, she's just a funny lady. She had the attitude of, like, an angry goth teenager as an adult. Like, her favorite album, like, when I was growing up, was like The Downward Spiral by Nine Inch Nails.
Wow.
So yeah, it was, and she's always kind of been like, just had that underlying like rebelliousness to her. So she would always say something kind of witty, like a bad kid in class. But other than that, like, so yeah, she's hilarious. But other than that, it was like watching like, not so much Looney Tunes, because I remember watching a lot of that stuff and just being disappointed as a child. I'm old. I'm old, by the way. I'm like 32. But in the 80s, everyone, watching Looney Tunes, they would like be making references to like Frank Sinatra and like being like Mickey Blue Eyes in the 80s, as if this was relevant. And like they were just playing all these reruns before like kids started getting better original programming. And so I was always like upset with that when I was a kid. And then I started watching like Saturday Night Live reruns and like Kids in the Hall and just stuff like that on Comedy Central. And what was that, The Vacant Lot? That was just like another Kids in the Hall spinoff. And just shows like that. I was one of those kids that loved Wayne's World and would watch that all the time when I stayed the night at my friend's. So many.
Thank you.
Thank you for asking. It was a toughie.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy? And if you wouldn't mind moving the microphone just a touch closer.
A touch closer? Sure.
There you go.
Depending on how you want to actually define it, I indirectly got involved. I used to live in California, and at one point I was just trying to get by, and my ex and I, we wound up starting just like a dog walking business to make some side money, like we're some millennials or something like that. Side hustles. And so I was like walking this guy's dog and leaving these really silly notes behind at his house. And one day he called me up afterwards and was like, hey, would you like to help me start writing jokes? I'm a magician and I put on this show at the Magic Castle. And so he originally hired me to like write some jokes for him. And the thing is that I didn't wind up writing too many jokes. I wound up just like helping workshop his jokes. And then I never got really that good at it because it was all Magic Castle based. So like I have never been, I don't know, I never really got too into working and doing that stuff at the Magic Castle because I couldn't think of a good joke about Uri Geller. But ooh, he's an old magician. it's a cool culture. But they're all like really into the history of the Magic Castle. And so, like, and I just didn't become a history buff when I was working for this guy, and I couldn't, like, supply the kind of jokes that he really needed for that. And I just... Hmm. But other than that, and then I moved back to Michigan, excuse me, carbonated beverages. I moved back to Michigan and was getting some food from that corner restaurant.
Gita Pita?
No, the other, on the other side of the street. It's is it Chinese food? I can't remember what the restaurant
is. Never eaten there.
Oh, well, I was getting food there and I was walking past Dog Store and I saw that there was an improv class thing going on. And oh, not class, but like Comedy Outlet Monday was going on, and I was like, I gotta hit that up at some point. And so I did. And then I started performing more regularly. I mean, aside from like that show that I did with that guy, I was just helping him write, and then I would kind of stand around and, like, you know, hold cue cards for him. And then I started getting into like improv, which I hadn't ever done before.
Thank you. Let's talk about Planned Parenthood.
Yes, Planned Parenthood. All of them are wonderful. That's it. Those guys are great. Actually, it was Cameron Burwald who got me involved.
Big time.
Big time. Bees tease. yeah. Cameron got a hold of me one day and was like, "Do you wanna join this?" And I did, and it was cool. I went over to Tom Hunt's folks' house and just practiced with Josh and Andy and him, and they were all being really funny. And I still feel like I'm new to improv, but I, even though I've been at it for like a year now, but those guys are all really talented and really funny. And whenever I'm on there with them, like, I've heard other people talk about improv and how, like, you're on a team and, like, some people feel like it's a lot of pressure. And I'm like, I agree, because I feel like it's a lot of pressure. And my goal most of the time is, because I panic up there, I try to play the straight man, because I know that, like, Tom, Josh, and Andy, and rest in peace Cameron, who lives in Chicago now, we'll all come up with something amazing and hilarious, and I can just rely on them, and I can just give them premises. But I mean, you know, I've been known to say some crazy crap on my own, but I like their work.
Yeah, me too. I am a fan. Well, actually, the president of the unofficial fan club, in fact.
It's true.
If anyone would like to join, hit me up.
I'll join.
I don't think you're allowed to join your own fan club.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That would be a little weird.
Yeah. If I ever open up membership that widely, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
I'll put you on a standby list.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy for both performing and for watching?
I think it depends. I think, in general, I watch a lot more sketch. I grew up watching a lot more stand-up, and when I watch stand-up now, I do really enjoy it, but I don't know. I think I've started to admire sketch a little more than I used to. And so I enjoy watching sketch, and I admire people that write sketches, and I want to get better at it myself. And I could talk about the great qualities of each one.
Please do.
Because personally, whenever I tried to do a sketch with Planned Parenthood, it's like we don't really spend that much time learning all of the lines, and then we just kind of like give ourselves an outline and then fudge it. And that is good to me, because like a lot of times a lot of dialogue just will come naturally anyway and just be the dialogue that's supposed to happen, and you don't necessarily need to write that down as long as you have a premise for the joke. Everyone, I'm a pro. Listen, hear me out. I wrote bad jokes for a magician that he didn't like. So yeah, take my advice, kids. And I don't know. And writing's really hard. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I like the results more than I like the process. sometimes, I mean, if the results are good. So sketchprov. There we go. That's the answer.
So you like having some structure, but also mm-hmm. having the improvisational nature of the dialogue.
Yeah. So I love having certain punchlines and wanting to work toward those and plot points. And then, like, especially when, once again, complimenting the guys that I work with, but I mean every other improv group in town that I've seen has been amazing too. So, like, just watching the dialogue unfold when there's, like, a certain premise that they're working within. Like, I know that the guys that I know, the people that I know, are just going to fill it with cool stuff. Sketchprov.
You mentioned earlier carbonated beverage.
Oh, yeah, because I was kind of burping as I was speaking, yes.
Yeah. What are we enjoying this evening?
We are enjoying a Shorts Brewery Hop Stash. It is an American India Pale Ale with grapefruit zest. I didn't pick up on that grapefruit. My tongue should have been paying more attention.
Yeah, I'm not catching too much grapefruit on there, but it's just the zest. So maybe zest tastes different than the juice.
True, true.
It's nice, though.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for bringing that.
You're very welcome. The Grand Cast, sponsored by Shorts.
I wish. If any brewery is looking for a local podcast to sponsor, please contact my booking manager. He deals with that side of things. Nice,
I wanted to ask about the intern situation, but I can wait on that.
There'll be an update.
All right.
In the second portion of the show.
Gotcha. I love it. I'm happy. This is fun.
What are some of your all-time favorite comedic movies?
I mentioned Wayne's World. I'm a big fan of that. I haven't watched it in years, but I'm assuming it still holds up.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies that hold up, Spinal Tap.
Hmm.
Like, I can't believe I watched that a few months ago. I still think it's funny. Really good. Other than that, I like a lot of comedy movies in general, but I also like just dumb bad movies. Like, have you ever seen like Double Trouble? There's these like two bodybuilder guys that are like babysitters. No, they're not babysitters. There's one of those movies. They've got one of those, but there's these two bodybuilder guys where one of them's like, a police officer, and then his twin brother that's also a bodybuilder is on the wrong side of the law, and there's just like all sorts of terrible, it's campy and bad, and like at one point one of the bodybuilder guys lifts a satellite, like an old school satellite, off of a TV building and throws it at a bad guy.
Double Trouble?
Yeah, it's like Peter Paul and Victor Paul or something.
They're IRL twins?
Yeah. Yeah, and they've got these amazing mullets and these hilarious cool outfits, and yeah, they're definitely like stuck in whatever time period they're at. And then there's also other ones that I like that are like, I love Class Act. It's like a kid and play movie. I never got to see any of the House Party movies. I've only seen Class Act, and like, it touched me, man. And I like that kind of stuff. And they're just silly. I've got that on VHS if I can find a VCR to put it in some point. Other than that, you know, just your standards. Like, I love The Jerk. I love contemporary stuff too. People always like Step Brothers was good. That was like silly. And I've watched a lot of them. There was one point where I was watching a lot of those comedy movies and I was getting mad because there was like, this is like a whole other rant, but I was like, getting mad because like the female characters in a lot of them were just like love interests and underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. And before I was like mad at the, when I was a kid and I was younger, I was like mad at the female character for being like a dumb character, as if she had any like agency in that. Like, it was just like some script written by some dude. And then like, I realized that I was a bad feminist as a child. And I, you know, had to figure that out. And I like how there are now there's more of a female voice in comedy. And did we talk about TV shows? I love.
What's next?
I love 30 Rock. I love.
I observed recently that some of the movies I really enjoyed when I was younger definitely were not very pro-feminist. I went back and I watched Old School and The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Both of which there was a lot of objectification, like scantily clad or exposed women.
Mm-hmm.
Breasts.
Yeah, yeah.
No dongers, though.
No dongers.
Mm-hmm. No man buns. Like, butt buns, not hair buns. None of those either, thankfully.
I mean, it is really weird when you, like, watch some of them, like, how it's just, like, even now today with some, like, television shows, and even back then, though, too, you can just, like, tell that, like, the dialogue for a lady is just written by some dude, and, like, it's weird. But at the same time, like, I don't want to just dismiss it, because there's, like, not just the, I mean, I'll dismiss the dialogue and the dumb parts, but, like, they're still, you know, the backbone of a joke that's been redone 1,000 times that are cliches now and stuff like that potentially is in there. So when you look at it, hindsight's pretty good.
Yeah. Gaining some perspective on things you didn't notice before.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your all-time favorite television shows?
All right, yeah, TV. So, it's definitely moved with the times. Like, I've always loved, today I still do love stuff like 30 Rock, because there's so many good jokes just compressed into it. And then, like, I enjoy, like, jokes from, like, that Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I enjoyed Parks and Recreation. Talking a lot of Tina Fey here, and Amy Poehler. I liked Community. I like Dan Harmon in general. He's an enjoyable guy. I like Rick and Morty. It's fun. But I mean, if we're going to start, like, in my youth, I was just watching a bunch of, like, you know, SNL reruns and cartoons and stuff. And then, but I've always kind of just gone with it. Cause I mean, there was a while where, like, Family Guy was, like, one of the funniest cartoons on TV and I liked it for a long time. And then I kind of get, you know, you get kind of tired of it. Like, I remember watching an episode of Futurama, and after watching Simpsons and growing up in the Simpsons, by the way, the Simpsons, I love the Simpsons. And like watching it and then watching Family Guy and feeling like Futurama felt so slow compared to, like, how they were delivering the jokes.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is that it's just, like, things were evolving at the time. And I still appreciate Futurama and The Simpsons now. Not that I watch them regularly, or I haven't seen any of those shows in a while. But I still appreciate this, like, where I came from. Don't forget your roots.
Yep.
You know? Don't forget where you came from, Sean. And so, yeah. Good stuff. A lot of good stuff. A lot of talented people out there.
Which streaming shows are you currently watching?
Oh, I've been trying to watch some Rick and Morty. I used to really like The Kroll Show when that was on. Rest in peace. But lately I've been at the mercy of my GF's taste in television shows. And she's really into just trash reality TV. And I'd never watched it before. I'd never watched most of it anyway. Oh. I mean, aside from, like, The Real World growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all these shows have this same structure where they, like, do a bunch of stuff and then meet with these judges at the end.
Hmm.
And I was like, RuPaul's Drag Race, some sort of cooking show, some sort of other cooking show.
Which ones?
Chopped? Top Chef. Chopped.
Iron Chef?
Iron Chop Chef, yeah, and Top Jeff, even. And that's where they have Jeff Goldblum and
Ooh.
Other Jeffs compete for, you know, best Jeff.
I'd watch that.
I would watch that, too. But they all, like, so many of them have the same structure, and it's totally weird. There's even, like, this one where, like, these people are, like, body painting, and it was on Hulu, and I watched one episode, and, like, there's just something I irrationally don't like about it. I'm sorry if someone out there listening right now is, like, a body painter and it's their passion. Your life's work is worthless. Your life's work is worthless, and I hate you. I'm just kidding. All right.
He didn't look like he was kidding. I feel like that's a justifiable opinion. People have weird priorities.
They do. Like body paint. I'm just kidding.
No.
I just kind of roll my eyes at it. I don't know why.
Because it has no redeeming qualities as a contribution to society.
I mean, there's some bizarrely and weirdly creative stuff that goes on, but I don't know, there's something about, like, a lot of, like, paint on, like, on an entire person's body that just makes me feel like it just makes, I don't know, like, I feel like the paint would smell funny. I don't know if it does.
A bunch of chemicals soaking into your skin.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, what if your whole self is painted? I don't know. Can we move on? I'm really worked up here.
Moving on, let's talk about terrariums.
Terrariums, yes. They were from my past. So back when I used to live in Los Angeles, that same ex-GF that I had, we did the dog walking. She initially had the idea and started it. She went for it and started this terrarium business. And so she just quit her job and started doing it. At the time, I was working at, like, a furniture store in West Hollywood, and she just went for it. And she was working at this boutique in Silver Lake and noticed people were buying them, and there wasn't, like, an easy way to get them or get the supplies. So she wanted to start, like, a supply company, and she just took this risk, and it was really incredible that she did it. And then we decided, aside from selling these terrarium kits, we also made this product called an air plant pod, which was essentially a gourd that was, like, dried, and then we dipped it in paint. And this was, like, 2012, and so in LA at the time, there were all these, like, women walking around with this, like, bright neon purses, and, like, dip dyeing things was becoming really popular. Mm. And I just happened to intersect those two trends and put a air plant in it, and we started selling those as well and making those. And within about 6 months, I had quit my job, and we got into, like, gift guides and got into, like, magazines. Shortly after that, we were selling through Anthropology, and we had sold through West Elm for a little bit too. And that we wound up moving from our LA apartment to, like, this house on a mountain, and we were just working from home there, and it was totally crazy. That, and we did that for about a year and a half, and it was just totally crazy. I lived on a mountain fulfilling internet orders for some plant business, for, like, some air plant business that I had. Yeah, it was crazy.
How was twine involved in that?
Oh, well, twine, jute twine, was what we would use to hang the terrariums, and we would include that with every kit that we sold, as well as, like, when we worked events, we would hang a bunch of them from jute twine. Aesthetically, at the time, there was, like, this whole rustic modern thing going on, and, like this jute twine had this, like, perfectly rustic look that fit in. Also, there was, like, this whole industrial modern movement going on, too. I can talk your ear off about design trends from 5 years ago, because I stopped paying attention after that. So I haven't moved on.
Let's talk about silence.
Silence. I'm not good at being quiet and just letting things sit silently. But you, Chris, you own silence. You own it.
And I enjoy a good silence from time to time.
Is this silence just for, like, thinking to yourself? Or are you talking about, like, because I'm going to bring it up with, like, conversation, because I was listening to some Grandcast earlier, and, like, I was going over the Kara Williams episode, and she was talking about, like, making some sort of silly joke about feeling uncomfortable in the silence. But like, I know people that own silence. You own silence. I know two other friends that are just completely content with being quiet and can just like face any situation, and they own it, and they own it, and it's amazing. And I don't have that power, and I'm jealous. Like, you hear how much I've been talking? Hear how much Chris has been talking? He's got it because he owns silence. He doesn't have to say a damn thing, and he's comfortable because he's comfortable with his own skin. God damn it, we all wish we were that way. We'll figure it out. Be like Chris. Silence.
Yeah, I think it just takes practice, maybe.
I guess so. I should probably work on that.
Let's talk about self-publishing a book.
Oh, I have not. Well, how can I explain this? I think this relates more to another question of yours that you were going to ask me, and it's actually that question is, what's the best gift you've ever given? Is that one of your questions?
It's coming up.
Okay. Because that's more in line. I've never...
You want to do them both at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So I haven't self-published a book of my own, per se. What actually wound up happening is I was looking for a lot of information about how to self-publish a book, because my current GF had a blog for years. And used to be on grad.org. It was Scary Dinner. She was a food blogger for herself. She also wrote like about an alcohol column, like a drink column for review for a while too. But that website went down, and her birthday was coming up, which was actually like last week. And I took her whole blog and turned it into a book, and I gave it to her as a gift. And it, like, it's a little hardcover book. It's got her name on the spine, everything like that. And because the website with her stuff is no more. The host is no longer the most. The ghost. They're a ghost.
It was a very nice gift.
Yeah.
Very thoughtful. And a very nice looking book, too.
Thank you.
Very professional.
Thank you. That was the best gift I've ever given in my life.
How'd you do the layout? Is it...
Oh, the website had a template. It took forever. I learned so much more about Word, Microsoft Word, than I ever thought I'd know. I never told her this, so I'm telling you, the Grandcast listeners out there, I spent about 30 hours doing it. And it was just about 200 pages.
Hmm.
So.
All the formatting and.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
And it was like really weird because I live with her and I was trying to pretend that like I just had other shit to do. I don't normally just go and sit on a computer. And so like now I'm like, I got stuff to do. I'm just doing, dinking around. And so, yeah. It worked though. She had no idea. Especially because I didn't tell her. Yeah.
What is the best gift that you have ever received?
Hands down, rollerblades.
Oh. that recent? Yeah. Or?
Oh, no, my mom got me some rollerblades for Christmas once, and they were, if I were like going to die right now, if I were going to go to heaven, it would be like my teenage years rollerblading with my bros, doing tricks, turning tricks. We turned a lot of tricks at that time. 180s, jumping off stairs, turning tricks.
Like, prostituting yourself?
No, like, you know, when you're skating, you're like, you turn tricks. That's
not the context I've heard that expression used in, but like grinding on rails?
Yeah, a lot of grinder.
Sounds like a very good source of exercise and world exploration.
A lot of good stuff. No, I would definitely go back to doing that kind of thing. Other than that, I also had a group of friends that bought me a guitar amp for one of my birthdays. It was like really unexpected and nice of them. And also, I'm well aware that I said turning tricks, and I meant that literally. With rollerblades, you jump and you do turns. And you do tricks.
Like Tony Hawk.
Like Tony Hawk, but with skates.
He doesn't skate?
So the big debate is whether or not people that rollerblade skate, like I call it skating, but everyone's like, oh, skateboards. And I'm like, no, rollerblades.
Oh. Tony Hawk only does skateboards? I don't know.
I don't know either. I know he was the first guy on a skateboard to do a 900. Saw that on the X Games.
Huh.
Turned a lot of tricks at the X Games.
It's a good venue for it.
Yep.
People get all monstered up and...
You find one of my buttons. Like Monster Energy drink jokes are just...
Yeah.
You found it. All right.
I'm going to have to write that down for later. If you formed a band, what would the name of the band be?
Oh, man. I think about this all the time, actually, and I've not been good at it. Like, I had a band a long time ago, and I let some other people name it. We were called, like, the Sleep Tills, and it was a bad band name. I mean, it was fine. It was like no one else had it, and this was like the age of MySpace when, like, you just had to check MySpace to see if the other bands existed. And, like, nowadays, every band name exists, so I would have to just call myself, like, Sean McGinnity, but, like, me Sean McGinnity, not the other Sean McGinnity. There's two of them.
That would be the whole title?
Yeah.
Sean McGinnity, me Sean McGinnity, not the other Sean McGinnity. There's two of them.
Yeah. You got that.
The band.
Yeah.
That's a long URL. What? I guess you could turn into an acronym. S-M-M. S-M-N-T-O. S-M-T. T-O-T?
Probably. There was a lot to say, and I couldn't remember all of it, and I was like, man, he got it.
I don't think I remembered all of it accurately. Yeah. I was improvising as I went along.
Well, when I mentioned the other Sean McGinnity, I know that there's one in Arizona,
ooh,
and we're enemies, and I'm coming for you if you're listening.
You will probably want to wait a little while. It's like 120 degrees down there right now.
I'm waiting a while, if you're listening.
For a cold snap?
Yeah. That was the coldest snap I've ever heard.
There we go. Just need a little moisture.
Yeah. It's a powerful snap. Woo! Oh.
You gotta lick a little. Yeah. That was too much.
That was a little... Now my hands are just...
Ooh.
A little much.
So moist.
Too moist. Too moist. Oof. Whew. Got some chat for that snap. Oof.
What? Some chap?
Got some chat for that snap.
I think the skin of my fingers is separating from the bone.
Got some chat from that snap now.
Who are some of your role models?
Role models. So,
R-O-L-E.
Okay.
Not rollerblading.
All right. So I was going to say, first off, if it was rollerblade, Arlo Eisenberg, professional. He was like one of the first big names, keeping it real. I follow him on Instagram. He's got like 6,000 followers. It's kind of funny because like he was such a huge celebrity and now he's like, now it's not the same. And now like most rollerbladers that are professional make about 18 grand a year. Which is kind of depressing. But I believe in you, rollerbladers. Don't give up. Other role models. In terms of comedy and in terms of life in general, the people that I really admire the most are people that are community builders. I pretend that I want to be one of those, but it's like way more work than I feel like I can ever really put in. Like someone like Aaron Betka, Sean Francis, or just like art scene folks around town like Jen Schaub and things like that. Like they're just, they do all these things. They build community. They make these events happen. Mike Nichols, they just make all these events happen. Ryan Lathrop. And they just keep doing stuff. And it's like, it's so much work to organize events. It's so much work to put yourself out there, and you're so vulnerable all the time, and you're like vulnerable to criticism, and you're vulnerable to just all sorts of things. And I really admire that, and I wish I was more like it. And I've tried. I put on an event like in February, and it was so much work. It was so hard. And I wish I was more like that, and I wish I had the energy to pursue that on a regular basis. Like, gosh, like Erin Becca's interview for this almost like practically had me tearing up when she was talking about how like her mom and like how she was like seeing some of those things that her mom taught her like in her own self. I'm like crying right now. That wasn't even me pretending to fake cry. I was allowed to lose it, and then I had to like recover. And rollerblades, Arlo Weisenberg, hero. No one else.
Sean's eyes are moist right now.
As moist as my fingers after I licked them.
Not quite that moist. Oh. Judging by the sheen.
Judging by the sheen McGinnity.
Oh! There's a bell here if you would like to ring it.
I can ring. I've got choice for that too.
Yeah, okay. You're welcome to. And there's some little finger symbols over there somewhere.
I saw those. I was wondering what they were for. Do you mind if I want to disturb the table? There we go. There's finger symbols here. I think these are used for religious events or just for cool percussion.
Belly dancing?
Belly dancing? Is that what it's for?
Yep. You're actually... Sean...
Yes. I'm doing it wrong.
Sean Francis showed me the musically correct way.
There's a musically correct way,
please. Yeah, you hold them like both in the same direction and then kind of clean up.
Like that?
Yeah.
Ooh. Mr. Francis teaching us how to use these things.
You can also just smack it down on top of the bell and make a...
Is that the same note, almost? It was like a... Or was it just this hitting twice? I'm getting all up in the microphone space.
I'm tone...
Also.
Mute?
Tone nope, deaf. That's a ding. And this is a... And this is a... Which I can't imitate. I'm probably off. Yeah.
No, you nailed it. Tattoos?
None. I sometimes admire people that have tattoos, and other times I don't like them. I mostly don't like television shows about tattoos and then the justifications that people use. Like, there was this one episode of one of those like tattoo parlor places. I've only seen... All right, everyone, earlier I lied about seeing reality shows. I've seen like two other ones. So I saw this one tattoo show, and this lady was like, my friend died, and I want this drawing that he did on my arm. And then the tattoo artist on the television show was like, fuck that drawing. It looks bad. I'm going to make it look better and tattoo it on your arm. Because I don't want people thinking that my work is bad. And then she was like, well, this is for TV, so okay. And then got this bastardized version of her friend who died's drawing on her arm done by some a-hole from TV, which has nothing to do with why I don't like tattoos, but I don't like tattoo TV shows. That's worse than those fucking shows about body painting. All right. So, but then there's this other one where this lady was like, I'm going to get this tattoo of a robot wearing a tie because I hate corporate America.
Hmm.
And like, she was literally like the product of corporate America getting a tattoo of like a robot that was very on trend based on marketing. Like, it looked like very much like a 2012 popular robot that was like all over Old Navy products back then.
Hmm.
And then getting that tattooed on her with a tie on it. And I'm like, man, God, I'm very critical. I'm very nice in person, I swear. Unless we're talking about reality shows.
I think sometimes criticism is justified for things that are that absurd.
Yeah. I know that they say like that people can be their own harshest critic,
mm-hmm.
but when it comes to like people that are on reality TV shows, I am their harshest critic. Yeah.
I went through a reality TV phase. I really liked Gold Rush Alaska.
Never seen it.
It was a group of people in Alaska mining for gold.
That sounds crazy.
And failing miserably for like season after season.
Mm.
After season. It wasn't very good. But so, I couldn't stop watching it. I was engrossed in the quest for gold.
I mean, they're struggling. I mean, and if you... I don't know if there's characters that you actually... I mean, human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Characters that you like. Then, I don't know. There are some... I mean, there are charismatic people in the world. Like, okay, a show I do like, Great British Bake Off. Like, it's so friendly. They're so sweet. And, you know, there's some... Everyone on that show is so nice. And I learned so much about baking that I... You know, there's just so many facts that they give to me that I don't retain. But, like, I don't know. I like them.
Hmm. I went through a phase where I watched a lot of pawn shop shows and a lot of storage unit auction shows.
Please tell me more, because I have a story for you. I just want to.
You raised both hands. I thought you wanted to hop in.
Oh, I want to hear what you have to say, and then I want to chime in. That's what I call it when I interrupt. I charm in. What did you like about those shows?
I don't know. They don't have a lot of redeeming qualities. I did learn a lot about negotiation, especially from Pawn Stars. Those guys have been doing it for decades. They have a very reliable system that they use when someone brings in something that they want to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, they say no. Every time. Like, they're like, how much do you want for that? They always make the other person give the price first. Mm-hmm. Almost always.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say no. Immediately. Like, firm, hard no.
Yeah.
And then they offer about half of what they're looking for.
Dang.
And then they'll point out all the negative aspects of the item. They're like, oh, I'd have to get it framed. I'd have to get it cleaned up. I have to call an expert to make sure that it's authentic and get it certified so that in the person trying to sell its mind, it has less value.
Can I interject here now?
Interject okay. away.
So please. I'm just going to throw this offhand remark. I've got a friend who just recently became one of those people that like is an appraiser. Like she went to school and is appraising like people's stuff. Crazy. That's a weird job to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if she gets calls from pawn people. But second of all, one of the shows, I can't remember if it was Pawn Stars or something, they had a very special episode where they were dealing with some sort of product that they thought was from like related to Count Dracula.
Mm.
And so they were like, I'm going to go find my buddy that knows about Dracula stuff and works in it. And so they went to a place called Vlad the Retailer. And that was a boutique in LA on Monroe Street near my house. And the thing about Vlad the Retailer is that guy doesn't know shit about vampires. And it's just a store where he sells zines and has a punk rock venue in the back. But they came to him on the show and like he had some sort of lines that they fed him to say about this product from Count Dracula.
Huh.
And so he just like bullshitted it for them, probably made like some money, which was nice. Good for him. And yeah, that guy doesn't know shit about Dracula. He just has a store called Vlad the Retailer, which is probably closed by now, too.
Huh. So they're buddies that they call in as experts. It's all Hollywood magic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Huh.
Speaking of Hollywood magic, let's talk about living in California.
California. That's
knows
the beginning.
How to party.
That, too. I was trying to do the OC theme. I was even...
California.
Yeah.
California.
I don't want you to get sued if we sing too much of a song that, you know.
I know people at Fox, so we'll be all
okay,
right.
Okay, cool. But I think I'm probably a bigger fan of the Tupac Dre song about California than I am the Phantom Planet song about California from the OC. I will say. I think one of them... Both good, but one of them I like more. Rest in peace, Tupac.
He's still around.
Oh, well, keep up the good work, Tupac.
He just had a movie come out about his life.
Really, I didn't know about that.
Oh, me either.
So, yeah, I don't know about contemporary Tupac stuff, but I do know that I lived in California, and I can change the subject because I've run out of Tupac content. I moved there in 2010. I followed my ex at the time. She moved out there to try to be a screenwriter. Then she kind of just didn't get into it. And then we wound up starting that business. But I lived out there and took a job as a maintenance man when I first moved there. And then had an apartment complex. And some comedy people lived there. Have you seen Community? There was a mm-hmm. character named Garrett. He's a comedian that goes by the name Eric Charles Nielsen. He played Garrett. He just shows up in a bunch of other stuff. There was also another lady named Lauren Ashley Bishop, who's a comedian that tours as well. And then there's another guy named Matt Moore, who is like sometimes on Conan, like just as like a, I think he does sketches sometimes for them. I'm not familiar. It's not like I actually keep up with these people, but I follow them and pretend we're friends. So I worked in this apartment. Oh, also one of the guys from Jackass lived there. Like, the guy that was like a little on the heavy set side, he would like
super big guy.
Yeah, and they would have
Presley,
him. Yeah, and he would like he lived there too.
And it was a little on the heavy set side.
Yeah, he's a bigger guy.
He's like 300 pounds.
Oh. Yeah. He was totally so like all of them. So polite. I feel like if you're a celebrity and like people know who you are, you have a reputation to uphold, and so you're just gonna be nice to people. And that's been my experience in general.
You haven't met Charlie Sheen then?
I've never met Charlie Sheen. The only person that was kind of rude to me was Rude Paul.
Oh.
Yeah, that's it. I made a joke out of your name, Rude Paul. But please hire me for a job because I think I could give you some good jokes. Well, like I've only seen like a few episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I'm sure it's probably happened on it, but I feel like if they dressed up like one of those drag, the drag people queens in like a nun outfit and then had them walk on the runway, I'd be like, oh, RuPaul, say this, she's doing the Lord's twerk. And then like, yeah, that would go over really well. Yeah. Yeah. So I realized that I squandered my time out there, by the way. I just wasted it. Because, like, opportunities can happen for people. Here's the thing. I live in California. Anyone who's thinking about doing it, go for it. The thing about Grand Rapids is that, like, okay, I've got stories for you here. A magician hired me to write jokes for him, even though I failed. After one of my first times trying to get a job, I applied for temp work as an extra to stand in the background of TV shows. And then like, I thought it was bullshit because you had to call in to get a job. And instead Mad Men called me and had me stand in the background of like some little episode. And I just have met comedians at parties and they were just nice. And they just hung around this one dude just followed me around because I was one of the funny people there. And not that I was like trying to be outwardly funny, but like, you know, if you just meet your people and you know your people and you can make jokes with them, and there's an infrastructure there for people to get successful in weird ways. You can also fail and be totally poor, just like I was, but like there's more of an infrastructure and there's more opportunity to do such a thing. Not that Grand Rapids is a bad place. Grand Rapids has grown wonderfully. I am a big lover of this town. I plan on staying here. I'm not going back to LA anytime soon. I didn't want to be an actor. I didn't even realize improv involved in acting until someone was just like, oh yeah, because you're making characters and acting. And then I was like, shit, we're acting? I didn't pick up on it. So, yeah. California. Also, I've sold furniture to everyone that you've heard of.
Kim Kardashian?
No. Megan Fox.
Scarlett Johansson?
Brian Austin Green.
Tom Hanks?
No, not they're too big to go into the store that I worked at when I sold furniture.
Oh.
Basically, so you got like I've had to show stuff to like Kelly Rowland, and like I would always deal with like what's like Halle Berry's assistant.
Ooh.
Rather than Halle Berry. But then like assorted famous people would come in. Like Mindy Kaling, Shane Lynch, Adam Scott.
Adam Scott? Adam Scott?
I sold him some... Yeah, he's got a gray bed. He's got a gray duvet that I sold him.
Ooh.
Gray, my favorite color. Duvet. Yep.
That's French for...
thing that goes over your comforter.
What's the food like out there?
Oh, I was not a food person at the time. And I've been a vegetarian since I moved out there. I decided...
Oh, so no In-N-Out burger?
I got In-N-Out secret menu where you can get their grilled cheese.
Oh.
Which is amazing, by the way. But, yeah. It was the best fast food that I would have. Like, I still kind of crave it sometimes, even though it's just, like, American cheese with, like, a bunch of crap on it. But, like, their stuff is significantly more fresh, it seems. Mm-hmm. And they also pay their workers a decent wage. Like, if you're a person that works at In-N-Out, fuck you. You make more money than me, probably. You know? And
it's a good Christian company.
Are they? I didn't know that part.
A little scripture on the underside of every cup.
Oh, sure. I gotta be on the lookout. I know that, like, there was, like, so much controversy about Chick-fil-A and that stuff that was going on out there. Like,
being hateful bigots.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I've never had any other stuff. So
Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
I had it once.
Yeah. I still feel like I'm barely a food person. Like, honestly, like, the gal I'm with now, she's wonderful. She's, like... written this food blog. She makes amazing food, and she's
that,
like,
beet dip was so good.
Oh yeah, those beets by Dre were great. They were so good. She makes all sorts of amazing, like, mind-blowing stuff that is just wasted on my uneducated shitty palate. This is my apology to the world and my apology to food people. I mostly, like, would just subsist on, like, beans and rice if I could. And then probably a shit ton of ice cream.
Yeah, that's good. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, if I'm, lowbrow MFers. Like, people always want to go to places like Cold Stone or like Jersey Junction where you get, like, them scooping your ice cream. And I'm like, no, give me a twist cone that came out of a machine that's twisting, or like, and give me, like, the most processed, like, weirdly non-vanilla white ice cream that probably tastes like just sugar with, like, moose tracks. That's for me.
Moose tracks?
Yeah, moose tracks. Yeah, if I'm going to buy it from the store. Caramel, though. Caramel. I moved on from peanut butter. It's like caramel swirls, caramel with some chocolate in there. I'll talk your ear off about moose tracks.
Let's talk about working for a magician at the Magic Castle.
Okay. So the first time I had an interview with this guy, I'd never met him. We just were walking his dog, Harry the Worm. His name is...
What?
His dog's name is Harry the Worm.
W-O-R-M or W-U-R-M?
W-O-R-M. He's like a mix of a corgi with some other weird dog. I don't know. And he was adorable. And I would just walk him and leave little notes about how he left number ones and number twos, but he'll never be my number two. He'll always be my number one, shit like that.
Aww.
And so then he got a hold of me and asked me, oh, by the way, this magician guy has, the Magic Castle is like an exclusive magician club in LA.
Oh, and it's kind of like more for the people that are unfamiliar with.
Yeah, it's basically like the magician's hub of the West Coast. And so, like, people that know magic have heard of it and are, you know, generally excited to go. And it's like, you essentially have to know a member to get in. And I would often whenever I worked for him, it was usually at the club when we were putting on a show. So we did a little talk show called Who's Who, and it was kind of like a Tonight Show thing where they would have, like, guests come on and we would talk about, and they would, like, be magicians. Like, one time he had Jason Alexander, not while I was working for him, but Jason Alexander. And I mean, I can name drop all day. It's going to be so annoying. You're going to hate this, people in the audience. You're going to hate how much I name drop.
I like hearing names.
But so at one point, this magician guy, his name is, he goes by Fitzgerald. He was in a group called the Unholy Three, which had like the drummer from the Pixies in it, which is crazy. And then this just, yeah, it was crazy. And so anyway, he's got this show. He hires me. Most of the time I wind up not having time because I'm like working at a furniture store and then just doing my other side gig and then doing this too. And I wind up like just fucking it up. Aside from just helping him, like I wind up like writing cue cards, holding cue cards and helping the show, just running the show essentially like a shitty Tina Fey, like a subpar Tina Fey. And there was like, they'd have guests come and then perform magic tricks. And sometimes I would, you know, end up there with them, but not as often, not very often.
Did you perform magic
yourself? No, I've never been a magic guy.
Did you ever play magic?
I've never gathered the magic. I've never had a magic eye.
Can you see magic eyes?
Sometimes. I don't know the trick to doing it. I don't. I've never figured out how to turn that trick.
I couldn't for a really long time. It wasn't until probably like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. There was some page that had like a practice one that was just like two dots, and you had to focus to where the two dots converge into one dot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like how your eyes need to focus. And then I did the same kind of focusing on one of the, whatever they're called, 3D spectrograms, or I don't know what it's called.
For the record, though, you're saying that you learned how to do a magic eye through a Heller ellipses. Ellipses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Josh.
For so many things.
So witty. So efficient. Yeah, so I did that little show. One person I got to meet, even though he was the husband of a magician, Paul Dini, the guy that, he's like made up Harley Quinn, the character from Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just got to say hello, and that was like really bizarre because like Paul Dini, weird. That's it. Never been like a super huge comic guy either. Like I can talk to you about like X-Men a little bit, and I can talk to you about some stuff, and then I pretend to know, but I've never like gathered up enough of any culture to be like smart about it. So I'm like just more of like an everyman, but in like such a small, detached, terrible way.
Favorite X-Men?
I grew up, okay, so X-Men was essentially a transition from Ninja Turtles. So, like, your natural transition from Raphael is going to be Wolverine. He's the one with attitude. He's always causing trouble like a teenager, even though, like, he's like, I go where I want to go. I do my own thing, you know? And so...
Best hair.
Best hair. Absolutely. Yeah. And, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if it's... I don't think it's still Wolverine, because, like, now I think, like, he gets... I don't know, just... Play along. Be a team player every once in a while, Wolverine. Christ. But, so yeah, I can't really say what my favorite would be these days. I know, like, everyone... I guess I've grown some... Colossus. I've always loved Colossus, just for... I don't know, he seems like a nice guy that also seems to have great power and great responsibility at the same time. He seems to manage both of them well.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
I think there's definitely an aspect to all of us that do it that, whether you were like this as a teenager or whether you're like it now, where you just kind of like having attention and just getting to speak in front of people. It's because like I used to play in a lot of bands, and I still love doing it, even though I haven't done it in a while. But like, even though like I would always have trouble like making eye contact with the audience, still do today. There's just this whole thing about going up there and doing something that feels good, and it can be somewhat life affirming if you feel like you're doing it, if you feel like you did a good job that day. Same with like other creative pursuits, like people like talk about, oh, that life affirming thing. That was just me stealing like a Tom York quote from a long time ago when he's like, writing songs is like life affirming. And, you know, like, and I really nailed this British accent there.
Nailed it. Is that Tom York of the Peppermint Patty fame?
Yep, the Peppermint Heads.
And the Candy Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
That old British money. Nobody ever talks about how Peppermint Patties used to be made, though.
Yeah. But it was a lot more brutal back then, and sometimes it's...
Yeah, it's the product of the times.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
I love that it's not me. I definitely, especially now that I've gotten further into improv, to see people up there coming up with creative stuff and just like making these premises or exploring these ideas that connect to something. Like sometimes they'll make sometimes they'll say something meaningful, or it doesn't even have to be meaningful. It can just be like so absurdly funny in the connections that people will make. Like a lot of people say, don't be funny while doing improv. And I agree with that to an extent, but I think that if you're not trying to be funny, then you're doing me, Sean McGinnity, a disservice because I want to laugh. And so many people come up with so many clever things on the spot. Like, oh, one time was like Alistair was just at one of those comm jams, and he had like made some sort of joke about how they were doing hot yoga, and then he made another joke about it being like the floor is lava, like yoga or something like that, like hot lava floor. Sorry, Al, I fucked up this joke, but if you can remember it, it was great.
Al is hilarious.
He is.
Final question of the interview portion.
Ooh.
Before we take a short break. Do you know what it is?
What, is it the theme song one, or is it the... I don't remember the final one.
If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Oh, shit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's the one thing?
Yeah. there'd probably be a lot more. It would probably be like... Everything that you're doing right now is a mistake. Switch it up. Bro. Sean. I mean, keep rollerblading. That's so fun. But everything else that you're doing, fucking it up. I'll just sum it up. I'll just sum it up for you. Hopefully no one that's ever going to job interview me listens to this. But when I was 16, I was just... hanging out with some bad kids, running with a rough crowd, rollerblading with a rough crowd, but also a good crowd for rollerblading. There was some misdemeanors involved. There was some dropping out of school involved as a teenager. Had to get my GED. Kids, just stick with it. Stick with it. Go through it. You know what's amazing about being like a 25-year-old that like missed out on a bunch of stuff and then like graduated with all sorts of degrees? You're a 25-year-old that doesn't have to do it anymore. Imagine if you get to, like, I don't know, say 32, and you've only got, like, an associate's degree, and, like, sure, you stopped going to school so you can move out to L.A., and then you stood in the background and then picked up all these stories about how you, like, sold furniture to celebrities. Think about the value of that versus the value of a good liberal arts education. Think about it. Just kidding. Not just kidding. I saw Chris going for it. I wanted to do it.
Thank you. And I haven't had time yet to set up a transition into the break.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of performance, musical or otherwise,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to take us in there and then ring the bell again. Let me know when you've reached completion.
All right.
Please.
My performance will be, I used to be a musician and I still am, and I'm so self-conscious about this part, so I'm just going to give you some spoken word stuff about going into the next segment, because even if I just chose one note, that's almost a C. It's like a C. I'm choosing a C. I'm embarrassed of what note I will choose next, because me in the future might be like, Sean, you shouldn't have gone for A. That's the relative minor. And, you know, that's weird. So I'm just going to go for B. So. Mm-hmm.